Time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Martin Fleck and Dave Hall. Martin Fleck is the former coordinator of the Campaign for a Nuclear-Free World, former executive director of Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility, and former chair of the Northwest Disarmament Coalition. Dr. Dave Hall is a board member with Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility, past president of Physicians for Social Responsibility, and a board member with the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action. And they are both in this morning to talk about nuclear weapons, the START Treaty, and Washington State's role in all of that. So, Martin and Dave, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
It's a pleasure.
Great to be here.
So let's start out, and I failed to note that there was a premiere in Seattle last night of an important groundbreaking film, Countdown to Zero. You both attended that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Countdown to Zero is a new attempt by the producers of An Inconvenient Truth to bring again to a much broader public audience the issue of nuclear weapons in 2010. And we had a chance to see it for the first time and found it to be a very, very interesting, disturbing film talking about the realities of what the nuclear threat looks like in 2010.
I'm always interested to hear when I go to see a film, when I find out that it's based on a true story. I always find films more compelling when they're based on a true story, because I think that what really goes on in this world is very interesting. So here's a film that's a documentary, completely based on a true story, sordid, frightening, but true. I think that director Lucy Walker did a really great job of making this somewhat complex and frightening issue accessible to folks so that you can understand it. It's very artistically done film. For a documentary, I was very impressed with how watchable it was.
And as you told me just moments ago, the real metal there is that somebody walked away and said, you know, I'm going to have nightmares tonight, which is what one should have when they know the truth about this.
Yeah, at some level, that's exactly what happens. Understanding just how much of a hair thread holds us between the daily safety that we take for granted and whole cities disintegrating, being incinerated. So it's telling us a story that hopefully people will come to see, because it's a very important issue, come to understand it, and then stand up and say, it's time to eliminate nuclear weapons. That's Countdown to Zero is Countdown to Zero Nuclear Weapons throughout the world.
We can't wait. That's the thing. That there's a lot going on that Lord knows what went on in the Gulf of Mexico recently, and what with the economic crisis being the way it is. I mean, there's plenty of reasons for Americans to be concerned about a plethora of issues. However, this is one that's sort of like on the back burner, and people aren't paying a lot of attention to it, the nuclear weapons issue. But they will. I mean, if one of these goes off somewhere, anywhere in the world, the third nuclear weapon to destroy a city, I guarantee you there'll be a massive amount of attention. But it's too late. I mean, I think it's incumbent upon us to deal with this issue without the emergency having happened and shown up on CNN of some city in flames. So that's why I'm grateful to Participant Media and the Global Zero people for producing this film, because it's really vital that folks know this is going on so that they're in a position to prevent it from happening. Because we really, really, it would be irresponsible, and I would say immature, to simply wait until some horrible, horrible catastrophe happens and we all see it on TV and then we get all upset about it. Dave and I, we've already, the movie won't give us additional nightmares. We've already had our nightmares about this.
I've been doing this for decades.
It's sort of like, welcome to my nightmare, you know. So there's nothing shocking, or it didn't send me home with any additional fright. But I think it's it's very valuable for, Americans should be aware of what's going on with our tax money. and what's going on with our policies. And I think that this film is very helpful. It's very helpful at this juncture.
It's at the Varsity Theater in the University District. I think it's going to play 3 or 4 times a day for the next week or more. So it's something people should go and see. The film builds on what's become the consequence of 9/11 in thinking about national security. Through the 80s until the collapse of the Soviet Union, we had mutual assured destruction, the United States and the Soviet Union facing off with enormous arsenals of nuclear weapons, essentially guaranteeing that if either side fired, both sides are going to be completely obliterated. But with the advent of terrorists willing to die in the process of taking their revenge, there's no territory to retaliate against, so there's no mutual assured destruction. It's basically anybody that gets hold of the materials that are necessary, the fissile materials that it takes to make a nuclear weapon, can make a nuclear weapon that they can smuggle into a city or any other place. And so that changes the game. The big arsenals don't work anymore. What has to happen is all the fissile materials need an international alliance to keep them safe, to keep them out of the hands of people that might actually want to use them. And that's the changing game, that it's a cooperative security now, not a security of threatening your enemy.
However, the old regime, nuclear weapons regime, still exists. We still have both the U.S. and the Soviet Union, amongst others, having thousands of warheads pointed at each other. Can you give us the big picture and then also tie in Washington State's role in all of this?
Yeah, the United States and Russia still have the vast majority of all the nuclear weapons in the world, 95% of them or more. And right here, just 20 miles from Seattle on Hood Canal at Naval Base Kitsap Banger, where the Triton submarines are home ported, we have the largest single concentration of weapons of mass destruction anywhere, perhaps in the world, certainly anywhere outside of Russia, just right here in our backyard. We also have the Hanford Reservation, which is where the plutonium for the Trinity and Nagasaki bombs was made, and it's still the largest Superfund site anywhere in the Western Hemisphere, and that's a consequence of building these weapons right over here in eastern Washington. So we have, in the state of Washington, both ends of the problem here. We have the production disasters in terms of the environmental disasters, and we have the actual war-making machines. We have the most powerful, deadly warships in the world in the Trident submarines.
And as you find out in the film, there's still over 23,000 nuclear weapons in the world. And in Countdown to Zero, they go through the history of each nation getting the weapon. There's some amusing parts in the film because they went and did interviews all over the world, and they asked people, how many nuclear weapons do you think there are? You know, some people said, oh, there might be 100, you know. And it's hard to know. How do you know? It's not in the news. This is not a big topic of conversation, but fact of the matter is there's over 23,000 nuclear weapons, and there's quite a few nations now that people may or may not be aware even have nuclear weapons, such as Israel, Pakistan, India, China, and North Korea. North Korea has detonated a few nuclear weapons now. And that's the dynamic that we're dealing with. You know, you were talking about the legacy of the Cold War is the United States and the Soviet Union, or the United States and Russia, excuse me, have these thousands and thousands of nuclear weapons. But the dynamic now, and I think part of the motivation for this film and this new movement, and some of what Obama is doing, is that these nuclear weapons are now spreading. And the trend is for them to continue to spread. And when you challenge a nation like Iran, stop making nuclear weapons. Well, Iran is constrained by the Non-Proliferation Treaty that it's a signatory to. However, in the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the nations that have nuclear weapons promised in 1970 that they would pursue general and complete disarmament of their nuclear weapons. And so I'm afraid that, you know, our policy is leading to the spread of nuclear weapons because, there's frankly a frightening quote in there where Ahmadinejad is interviewed and he's saying, well, if these weapons are, you know, if you have them, then you must think they're good. And if they're bad, then why do you have them? You know, and if they're good, why shouldn't we have them? So, you know, there's a hypocrisy here. I think it would be very good for Americans to realize what our policy does and how, if we're concerned about how dangerous the world is, and it certainly is, and you'll find out in this movie, it's dangerous in ways that you didn't even know, okay, but our policies are leading to this danger that then comes back at us. And there's things we can do about it. You know, this is our tax money at work. These are our policies, and they're making us more insecure. But there's plenty of things that we can do that will make us more secure if we would just get on it.
The next big issue coming up is this New START treaty with Russia, which is a major step in reducing the nuclear arsenals on both sides. And virtually the entire military command is saying, yes, we need this. And in particular, we need this because it allows for much more secure inspections of the Russian facilities. And a great deal of the concern about loose nuclear materials is from the old Soviet Union. The security of the fissile materials, of the highly enriched uranium and the plutonium stockpiles in the former Soviet Union are not well secured, and most all of the efforts at trying to stop smuggling of this materials have been intercepted in the old Soviet Union or coming out of the old Soviet Union. So one of the things is to make sure we have a START treaty that allows us to work with Russia to secure those materials. Without the START treaty, we don't have a clue what's going on, and it becomes much more dangerous there.
And especially with all the treaties that during the former Bush administration, the U.S. backed out of or basically nullified, this appears to be a restart towards entering and honoring these nuclear-based treaties.
It is, and it's in a context where we've had a number of treaties, you know, throughout the time with the Soviet Union, and what's interesting is that those treaties have been honored on both sides, even though they've not necessarily been ratified either by the Duma or by the United States Congress. Both countries have lived by the restrictions in the first START treaties, for example, so that there is a reason to believe that these treaties, in fact, do make a difference, that they are honored in this context.
And the good news, in the big picture, the good news is that the trend now is returning more to normalcy in the United States policy towards treaties, towards nuclear weapons, towards how we look at the rest of the world. And this really is a good development and a good trend that we should be encouraging. In particular, Obama twice has said that the United States is now going to pursue a policy that would lead to a nuclear weapons-free world. Well, you know, he has said this may not happen in my lifetime, but I think it's the right thing to do, and we should do it. And I think he's put himself on the line somewhat about this. He did a Security Council meeting about disarmament. It's the first one I've ever heard of. The United States, I was very proud the United States was essentially calling this meeting at the United Nations to talk about this weighty issue. And now, you know, he has negotiated this START treaty, which frankly is long overdue to be renewed. And he negotiated that with Medvedev. And now it's going to be before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee next week. Now, there's some issues in the Senate of the United States, which I'm sure most of your listeners are aware of. We're having a hard time getting things passed in the United States Senate these days. To get a treaty ratified, we need a two-thirds majority of the United States Senate. Well, that's going to require bipartisanship like we haven't been seeing. And so it's important. It's really important that the senators realize that there's, you know, history is hanging in the balance here. In the event that the United States chooses not to ratify the START Treaty, well, I think that we're going to be going back we're going to be going back to the old era of somewhat lawlessness or disdain for, you know, there's going to be this image in the world that the United States could care less about the rest of the world.
And that becomes much, much more dangerous for us, because that's then a strong invitation for folks like Al-Qaeda to come after us and be more aggressive. There's just no question that there are efforts out there to try to gain access to a nuclear weapon as a way of influencing the United States, so that if we don't have cooperative security, if we don't figure out how to work together with the rest of the countries of the world to keep these materials safe, the rest of the organized, civilized nations of the world, then the rogue elements are going to have much more free hand.
But if we do the right thing, and I think we will, I think the United States will ratify the START Treaty, and that will lower the deployed warheads on either side to 1,500 nuclear weapons and the deployed delivery vehicles to 700. Well, you know what? Those are large numbers. But it's still moving in the right direction. I mean, obviously, we could end the world, no problem, with those kind of weapons. So we have to keep moving. And the rest of the world is waiting for the United States and Russia to get on board the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. Now, if we can, you know, I've been working for the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty my entire adult life. The Senate rejected it in 1999. Meanwhile, the rest of the world continues to put out seismic monitoring stations, build everything that they need to build. Many nations have signed on. Most nations in the world have signed on and ratified the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, but they're waiting. There's 44 key nations that have to do it. The United States has really got to do it. Obama has made a commitment that he's going to get this done while he's president. I just want your listeners to be aware of that. This is not going to be trivial. If we get the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty ratified by the United States and it goes into effect, then that is basically the world telling the next generation, you know what? We're done with this nuclear weapon stuff. We're not going to test them anymore, because we realize that we got onto the wrong path and we need to get on a different path, which is the path that Obama's been talking about, leading to a nuclear weapons-free world.
The contrary view really comes out of the nuclear weapons defense industry that has enormous investments in these weapons systems, so that there is a huge political pushback on these issues. The power of the industrial commitment to generating these weapons, it's a very lucrative business, is very much, I think, felt in Congress. And that's where the people are really going to have to stand up and say, no, you know, in spite of whatever may be somebody's corporate interest in developing nuclear weapons still, we don't want these things. Part of the challenge right now is that the president, I think, has been forced to make perhaps some Faustian bargains in relation to rebuilding the nuclear weapons complex in hopes of gaining the kinds of votes. He needs at least 7 more votes than the Democrats can put together, at least 7 Republican votes to get 67 votes in the Senate. And that seems to be the rationale for putting close to $100 billion into the budget for upgrading the budgets for the nuclear regulatory, for the military nuclear industry in the United States.
For the labs and for new facilities. There's new facilities in the pipeline now for the nuclear weapons production. New pits, new plutonium pits. It's all about supposedly keeping the nuclear stockpile, you know, usable and reliable, that we might have to replace parts of these nuclear weapons because they're getting old. And so, yes, billions of dollars in the pipeline now for new toys and new plants and new facilities for the nuclear weapons complex.
Clarify that. Pits. What are pits and how do they fit into this?
A pit is the plutonium core of a nuclear weapon. It's one of the most difficult things to create in any nuclear weapon.
And that's something that needs to be renewed or replaced on a regular basis, correct?
Incorrect.
Oh.
I don't buy. I personally do not buy that.
Well, no. From the standpoint of the people that are pushing this, the nuclear weapons industry.
The studies about the reliability of the pits and the warheads have pretty consistently indicated that they have a very long shelf life. The argument that they have to be retested, they have to be remanufactured, just hasn't held up when the folks that didn't have a vested interest in the outcomes were taking a look at that. So, no, it's really, it's making new nuclear weapons. And the scariest piece of this that we've discovered is at Los Alamos, the lab, weapons lab in Los Alamos, they are building a new facility, perhaps a $5 billion facility that when it's up and running full steam, will be able to generate about 125 new plutonium pits a year, so 125 new nuclear weapons a year coming out of Los Alamos when this new initiative, comes to, comes online.
Well, and that seems to be part of the crux of the problem here. It seems that with regardless of the number of treaties that get passed or the U.S. talks about or enters into, there's this constant move towards we need to update things. We need new pits. We need the next generation of nuclear warheads to be researched, and therefore we need the research facilities. You've got over at Bangor, they're in the process of trying to get a second weapons handling wharf, aren't they?
That's very expensive.
So yeah. To be able to do twice as many missiles into the subs as they can now.
Yeah, they claim that they need a new facility. It's an $800 million facility to continue to handle the loading and unloading of the nuclear missiles out of the Trident submarines. It's a way of saying we're going to have these weapons indefinitely. Another issue that's coming up probably within the next 5 years is the beginning of the budget process for building the next generation of Trident submarines, which would be coming online around 2030. The submarines' projected lifespan ends around 2030, so that they're going to be starting to look at the replacement of these warships that cost well over $1 billion apiece and are the most dangerous weapons ever built by humankind. A single Trident sub, fully loaded, has the capacity to block out the sun in the entire hemisphere. It's just extraordinary that we would even consider doing such a thing. But that's where we go. The thinking from the Cold War continues. The Trident submarines continue to patrol at Cold War levels. They're out at the same rate, same time spans on patrol in the Pacific and the Atlantic as they were when we were facing the Soviet Union, although they've been shifted now where the majority of patrols now are toward Asia and presumably China, which again seems bizarre given that China produces over half of our consumer goods and holds over $700 billion of our debt, and we're going to threaten them with nuclear weapons? Just within the last month, there were three of the Trident subs that were surfaced in Asian ports, and people were questioning, what's the United States doing here, surfacing these weapons at China's front door?
If Congressman Norm Dix, Washington 6th District, is listening, Congressman Dix, we've got to wean ourselves off of this federal spending on these investments that have no future. If we want to talk about where our tax money is going and how is this happening and how could we be investing like this, well, talk to Congressman Norm Dix, for one, among others. It's time for us to build our economy around other things besides nuclear weapons and nuclear weapons production. The Greens have a saying, no investment without a future. So it's time to stop. And the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, once it goes into effect, I think it will be a signal that we are ready to begin the process of ending this misadventure that we've been on.
This raises a huge problem for the state of Washington in terms of converting from the military economy on which much of our economy is based. Kitsap County has well over half of its entire economy coming off of the Navy. The Bangor base brings $3.5 billion into the state of Washington every year. So if we're going to try to transfer our investments in the human future, we need to find ways to give these good folks jobs, the folks that are working for the Navy. They need to be family wage jobs. And the question is, are we even beginning to think about that as opposed to just continuing down this blind road? Hopefully, we will begin to think about this more constructively. This next weekend, the August 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th, which is the anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima on August 6th and Nagasaki on August 9th in 1945, the Ground Zero community is hosting a gathering at our new park, new house, which is immediately borders on the Bangor base. The backyard of the property is the barbed wire fence of the Bangor base. And we will be gathering Friday evening for people that want a tent camp, and Saturday and Sunday having a series of gatherings and presentations, including talking about converting the economy from the military economy to a civilian economy. So we'd love to have people come and join us. That's the information's accessible at gzcenter.org.
All right. And then also, as we already stated, this next Tuesday, there's a key vote coming up in the Senate.
It's in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I'm not sure when the full Senate is going to vote on it. Probably, I would think, within a month. It's going to come before the full Senate. It's definitely going to be something to watch, definitely something you could contact your senators about. If you have friends who live in the red states, you might want to contact them and ask them to urge their senators also to support the START Treaty. And I wanted to mention a couple other websites. PSR.org, good place to look for all things to do with these sorts of issues. And PSR and Washington PSR are both members of the Campaign for a Nuclear Weapons-Free World, and that's nuclearweaponsfree.org.
Very good. And the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, when is that coming up?
Well, that's a tough one. When I was back in Washington, we were talking a lot about what were the potentialities of that. I mean, START is a tough one, getting the START Treaty. However, there's such widespread support. I mean, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Secretary of Defense, everybody, I believe that they've got they've got enough support for that they're going to be able to get the 67 votes, although it won't be easy. The Tea Party's out against it, for instance. The Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty will be tougher. Obama has declared that he's going to make this happen while he's president. So I think it's better than a 50-50 chance that it'll come up before 2012. But it could come up sooner. I don't know. I don't think it'll come up before this next election in November. It'll probably be after that sometime. But the sooner the better, in my opinion. The rest of the world is waiting. And, of course, if some sort of horrific nuclear accident were to occur, it could be all bets are off. So I say let's get on with it.
Yeah. One of the things that one of the points the movie makes is that if a nuclear weapon is ever used again for whatever reason, the kind of loss of civil liberties that we see with 9/11, the kind of the increase in the national security state and so on, it will be dwarfed by what will happen in response to a nuclear weapon going off, because the carnage from a nuclear weapon will be 100 times 9/11.
All right. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you both for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
We have just been talking with Dr. Dave Hall and Martin Fleck, and they are both with the Martin formerly with the WPSR, Dave with WPSR, and both involved with the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action, which is, again, having its events starting next Friday evening at their location out in on Kitsap Peninsula next to the Bangor Trident Nuclear Subbase. You can find out more about their organization via their website, gzcenter.org.